My thing is just, I think there is something to superhero fatigue, and I think there's definitely something to shared universe fatigue, and I think it's just way too late in the game to be making a new universe.
Yeah.
I think Marvel is going to continue to do fine. I think DC, pending the success of Wonder Woman, will do fine. But I just don't think people are willing to throw themselves into a whole other universe that they know isn't going to pay. They spent so much time building up these other universes and watching these other universe films. I don't think they're going to be able to commit themselves to another one where they have to start over.
Hi, and welcome to Episode of Cinemation. I am Brandon Sparks.
And I'm Thomas Horton.
And we're in the same room for our actual podcast. We're currently in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. Yep. We show the screening of our thesis film for USC, Camp Nichols. Thomas and I came on the show and talked about it a few months back with Ben. And so now it's officially over, and we're going to do the whole festival circuit and see how that goes.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm very excited. And it was a fun weekend. There was troubles with the screening, but it worked out well.
Yeah, I mean, you're always going to have a few technical difficulties, but...
People seemed to enjoy it. It was a good response, and we had a good response when we showed it at USC. So yeah, we're very...
We had a great turnout.
Very happy with it. So Thomas, what have you been watching recently?
I've been watching during your time
off since USC?
Not a lot, because there's haven't been many podcasts dropping, and I haven't been on any of them.
Yeah.
Because between finishing up Camp Nichols and finishing up all just USC in general, Brandon and I both just got our master's at USC. And then traveling and family and graduation, I've lost track of all my TV shows. In the like little half a week I had of downtime before getting my family on their planes back out of LA and coming out here, I have been desperately trying to catch up on The Leftovers because this is the last season and I don't want to get too far behind.
Yeah.
And I just absolutely, words cannot even describe how much I love that show. It's very personal. Connect, like I feel personally tied to that show, and yeah, it's a really interesting season. I think the thing that I love about that show, and it's not something that necessarily comes through in the first season because I don't even think they knew it in the first season, was after the first season they brought in a new executive producer who actually came to talk to one of our classes, Mark Speziale, and or Tom Speziale, and he said just kind of, he was like, yeah, the first season was about grief. The second season needs to be about wonder. And so they just took this whole idea. Like the first season was like, what if like, you know, 2% of the world's population just disappeared out of the normal world. And then with season two, they took it and was just like, well, this world obviously isn't normal anymore. So let's play with it.
Yeah.
And so now there's all this stuff about whether like Kevin, who's Justin Theroux's character, is like actually the reincarnation of Jesus and like all this kind of weird kind of twisted, but there's always this like underlying layer of fun, which is so interesting because it's a really dark show, but it's weird and it's fun and it's got some of the best performances in TV right now. It's, I don't know what it is, but anytime Justin Theroux cries, I cry. I can't help it. And he does it so well. But, and Carrie Coons is, you know, I think this, Carrie Coons is currently on Fargo and
and Leftovers.
And Leftovers. And then I think like just the world is her oyster after this. Like I think we'll definitely be seeing her in more film pretty soon. And she deserves it because she's amazing.
Have you been watching Fargo for season three?
I have, but I haven't been. I was watching it before all this stuff went down. And now I'm trying to get back into it. But, you know, when I get back from Tuscaloosa, I'll definitely be diving headfirst in all these TV shows that I'm missing out on.
See, I don't watch Fargo. I know I need to be because everyone tells me I should be.
It's great.
My parents just started watching Fargo, which was very confusing.
My parents watched season, kind of enjoyed season one, did not care for season two, and I don't think will bother with three.
Because I haven't watched it. I know it kind of jumps around. Do you have to start with season one to get the other seasons?
Season two is a prequel, so it's interesting. In some ways, it functions as better to start with two, but in some, there's a couple of ties into season one that you'll go, oh, that's what happens. That's where season one came from. So it's interesting, you know. Okay. But I think you could dive into two without having seen one and be fine.
It's just, what if you dive into three without...
Three is completely separated from the first two. Okay. It has no ties to the first two.
Because my parents are starting with three.
Yeah, yeah. Three has zero ties to the first two.
Okay. So what I've been watching... I've watched a few movies recently, but I'll go with TV. I haven't finished it, and I'm going to try to finish it. And I know Thomas doesn't watch this show, and he will not watch this show. and that's 13 Reasons Why on Netflix. And I think I just wanted to watch it because everyone's talking about it, which is kind of what you get into with... When with Netflix, like if you don't watch it, because Ben and I talked about this in the last episode, if you don't watch it kind of a few weeks out after it happens, you kind of miss the whole tidal wave of all the acclaim. And
which is why you never ended up watching Stranger Things, because you just wrote out the hype and then it wasn't relevant anymore.
And then it wasn't relevant. No one cared. I watched episode one. I really enjoyed episode one. Because someone wanted me to watch Stranger Things in the OA and compare the two, because a friend of mine didn't like Stranger Things but loved the OA. And then Hunter loved Stranger Things and hated the OA. So I need to try to finish both those. But 13 Reasons Why, I almost feel like Riverdale and 13 Reasons Why are very similar in like what they're trying to do. They're both focusing on a murder or a death or a suicide or a death of a teenager and kind of how it affects the town, the people in the town, the relationships. And I think even though you didn't see 13 Reasons Why, but you've seen Riverdale, you talked about how like it's probably because 13 Reasons Why takes itself too seriously and Riverdale doesn't do that.
Riverdale is trash made by people who know that they're making trash, which is the best kind of trash.
I do like 13 Reasons Why, but there's certain things just about the high school dynamic that I just kind of question. And it might be because that just wasn't really my high school experience is why. There's some interesting technical stuff to it because it's a lot of it's told. There's like present day and there's flashback. And one thing I like they do technically is with the present day stuff, it all has this cool, like cold tone to it. It's almost all like blues. But then with the past, it has this warmth and kind of like golden glow to it, which is interesting. So, like, it's because I think they made a good choice of like sort of trying to. Because they're jumping back and forth so much, they need to show a way to where you're showing you're in the past and in the present. I think that was a good directing choice, but I think it's a good show. I think the performances are good. I think that the main two actors are really good. The main guy was in Goosebumps, the Jack Black movie.
Which I never saw.
I think you might like. I mean, it's
I saw
it's
pieces of it. You found a watch it one
okay,
day.
I enjoyed it. Let me rephrase. I enjoyed it because I didn't have high expectations going into that Goosebumps movie. But I think he's good. I think she's really good. And this is like one of her first like American things. So I think she'll do a lot. But I think it's decent. I think it brings up a lot of questions about what it's trying to represent and the representation of like suicide and suicide amongst teens. I think that's very iffy, if that makes sense. It brings up a lot of questions, and I don't know if it represents it in the best light and mental health. I know you have thoughts on that.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I've watched about half of it. I know they're trying to do a season two, and from what I'm told, there's no reason to do a season two.
Yeah, that's from what I
that's
heard.
What makes it, and that's what the whole thing revolves around this suicide, this just girl.
Drop in for more suicide.
Yeah, that's what I'm very worried about that. I think they need to learn how to just like, I think in this day and age, especially with Netflix and streaming services, we need to have more of just like limited series. And some people do that, but I think Netflix might fall into the trap of like, everyone loves season one, we gotta make a season two. And like, maybe it's just best to just keep it as that contained thing. Maybe we don't need a season two of that hit show. And so, because with Netflix, they're just going to release something else that will take the world by storm. So, but yeah, that's TV stuff I've been watching. And then we both, to go into our topic tonight, we both recently watched Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Men Tell No Tales. So what were your thoughts on it? Because I know you're a big Pirates fan, of the first one especially.
Yeah, of the first one. And I feel like the trilogy, we could go do a whole episode on the trilogy, yeah. But I still feel like, it's, you know, I think I've said on the podcast before that Gore Verbinski is like a guilty pleasure director of mine, mm-hmm. just because even if he does a bad movie, you know that it's still going to have like some really great set pieces,
yeah.
which is, you know, my big problem when Lone Ranger came out and everybody, it became the trend to give it a 0-star review. That was obviously just the trend because that movie deserved some kind of stars for the train, just the train set piece alone was incredibly well directed. But yeah, so I think there's always redeeming factors about the second and third films, and I think they also just continued to ride the momentum of the first film and just the fun and all that. Three got a little bloated, and then four, I told Brandon, I feel like four just, in response, it was kind of an overcorrection of the third one being too bloated, and it was just like so bare bones that when I saw it, I was like, oh, that was good. They're getting back to the fun of the first one. But then I completely forgot what happened in that movie. And mm-hmm. I've seen it 2.5 times now, and I still can barely recall the plot of that movie, which is a bad sign. So that's me going into it. I'm a huge fan of mm-hmm. the first one, big fan of the trilogy. I think as a whole, it works well as a trilogy. And, not a huge fan of the new one.
Yeah.
It was fun. Mm-hmm. I told him it was worth the price of admission, which is, you know, I shouldn't say this as someone who wants better film to be made, but it was mm-hmm. worth the price of admissions to see those characters back together again.
Yeah.
But a lot of script problems.
Yeah.
Too many storylines.
Yeah.
Obviously setting up a franchise but still kind of like blowing all their, like, it felt like two or three good ideas for separate Pirates movies all thrown into one. And it was like, well, if you guys knew you were going to make a franchise, you know, just space them out because you've got a couple good ideas, but they weren't able to explore any of the ideas well.
Yeah. And that's what it feels like. It's trying to set up, I think, a whole nother trilogy is what it feels like. Mm-hmm. And in a way they're trying to bring it, they're almost trying to bring it back to, because we don't want to ruin too much with it, they try to bring it back to like the first trilogy is what they're trying to do, it feels like. And like I said, because I remember watching it, I was like, the first 20 minutes I didn't think was needed. It kind of felt just a little too much exposition-y in the first few, like first half hour of it. It just felt like it was, and I guess because I just recently rewatched the third one, because the third one came out 10 years ago. And I enjoyed the third one. It was interesting, like, watching the third one now, because I remember not liking the third one that much when it came out. And then kind of looking at it now, and still, like, it still has a cohesive story. It's still following the whole trajectory that's set up in the second one. And it finishes the story. It finishes kind of the arcs of those characters for that series.
Mm-hmm.
And specifically, like, I think Johnny Depp, or with Jack Sparrow, I think that's the big one, is that at the end of the third one, he ends up essentially giving up this. He wants immortality and three, and he wants to sail the seas forever. And by stabbing the heart of Davy Jones, he'll get that. And instead, he gives that up for his friends, to where they can, or one can be alive, and instead they also have a relationship afterwards. And he knew that if he didn't give that up, they wouldn't have that. And mm-hmm. the thing is that that's a big bond they create at the end of the third one. And then the fifth one, when they bring back kind of things from that third one, from that trilogy, you lose that entire bond that was there. And I think that was the problem. I felt like they were just trying to forget the trilogy, but also tie it back into it. And I do think Johnny Depp is really great as Jack Sparrow. I know there's a lot of complaints of like, oh, he's just falling into the same thing over and over again. But it's really just a great character
mm-hmm.
for him, and he has a great backstory. He has a great story overall with all the things he's done. And I think with the trilogy, there's a lot more character development to Jack Sparrow than it was in this one. Like, they try to give it to him a good backstory, which he has a good backstory in the fifth one, but it doesn't really add that much. He doesn't really make a character choice like he does in the 1 through 4.
Yeah.
That's the big thing.
Yeah.
And there really was, and I think even it would cost a lot, it's a big budget thing, there wasn't really a big action sequence that could compare to
the first three. There were two very interesting set pieces, and they both happened in the first 40 minutes of the film.
And that's
the bank robbery and then the guillotine.
The guillotine thing. And both of those, and those are very kind of callbacks to the open, because I think in the fourth one, there's a great opening chase through London. With the first one, there's the whole set piece of him like flying around the ship or whatever, mm-hmm. when he's about to be captured by and then it goes into the Orlando Bloom fight as mm-hmm. well. But even the ending, there's a little bit of like old school like trilogy stuff with the ship, kind of on the division of the, I don't want to go too much, but the division of the seas, you kind of see the ship kind of sailing on the edge of it. Besides that, there's nothing like as big as the Maelstrom in the third one, or the Spiral, or the Wheelhouse sword fight in the second one, or even the first one was the whole stuff with the sword fight between Barbossa and Sparrow, which is a big climactic moment, but there's not really any of that in this one. I think you said there's not much swashbuckling.
Yeah, my swashes were not buckled in this film.
And so what's some stuff you wish they would have done with it more?
Yeah, I mean, I think, like you said, they've established some really interesting... We know now that Jack Sparrow is more than just a drunk pirate. Yeah. So to take him back to that just felt lazy. You know, I wanted more sword fights. Mm-hmm. I wanted less mythology, because I think that's a big problem with I just knew as much as overbloated with mythology as the third film was, I just knew they were going to realize their mistake. But sure enough, I just found myself sitting through people explaining, you know, more things about mm-hmm. the mythology of the ocean. And I was like, okay, all right, let's go. Let's get some ship battles and pirates and you know. Yeah, I just think it could have been pared down. I think, you know, I say that like the fourth one was forgettable, but I think a part of that is that it wasn't tied to the storyline.
Yeah.
So it's just like it's just a side adventure for Jack, and it's not even really clear. Other than Barbossa, it's not even really clear that this takes place after the other films. Yeah. There's nothing really tying it to the other film. So this one, just in being tied to the original storyline, this one already has that going for it.
Yeah.
So they could have pared it down more, and I would have just been motivated by, you know, the Turner family and their relationship with Jack.
Yeah. Which really isn't touched that much upon. It's like...
It's there, and they're like, oh, look, it's a Turner, and he's back with Jack, but they don't do anything with it.
Mm-hmm. And you, yeah, and so one thing with pirates that's come out recently is it's doing very well overseas and internationally, but they're showing signs of like fatigue in the domestic box office. What's interesting is that it's not doing as great as I thought it would this past weekend, Memorial Day weekend, but it's doing fairly well like with audiences, like with the people that actually see it.
Mm-hmm.
And critics didn't like it. Not as many people are going to see it, and it's also, this is a big thing with Baywatch as well. Baywatch is doing fairly well with audiences, did terribly with critics, but it's underperforming at the box office. Do you see a reason why that's happening? Is there, like, do you have any thoughts on why it's going down? Even with Alien Covenant, they talked about was like how it dropped like almost 80% from its first week to its second week.
I don't know that people. I think it might be too early. Like, I just don't know that people are in like summer box office mode yet. I don't know if they're ready for blockbusters yet. You know, schools still, a lot of schools just finished this weekend. I don't know. I mean, I know Memorial Day shit is viewed as it's not the scientific beginning of summer, but it's viewed mm-hmm. as the honorary beginning of summer. But mm-hmm. I don't know if people are ready for it yet. And Baywatch, I've been telling you all weekend, I have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
How that bombed, because it was so so heavily pumped into people. I just thought they would brainwash people into seeing it. And it feels like one of those films where people are like, you know, it just feels like one of those perfect combinations where some people are like, I don't care if it looks bad. I love The Rock. I see The Rock anything. And then there's this other group of people who say, I don't care if it looks bad. I love Zac Efron. I see Zac Efron anything. And then another group of people would say, I don't care if it looks bad. I'll see, you know, women in bathing suits and anything. Yeah. And
it's beginning of the summer and like, so it's Memorial Day weekend.
Yeah. So I'm still perplexed by that one because I was not expecting the reviews to be as bad as they were. I thought this might end up pulling out some kind of like smart 21 Jump Street type thing. But I really wasn't expecting the box office numbers to be so low.
Yeah, it's intriguing it's interesting to see why that's happening. And it's like with summer blockbusters or summer in general, studio has been moving it up like farther and farther to where like it was early May with Marvel. That's like the beginning of the summer, and then it became Fast and the Furious is in April now, so that's the beginning of the summer. And in some cases, it's like, well, they always release this big blockbuster in March, so that's kind of the beginning of the summer. Like this year it was Beauty and the Beast. A few years ago it was Hunger Games. And so it's like, it becomes like what summer blockbuster season nowadays. It's where it's almost becoming year round. It's interesting because it's doing well with the people who go to see it, but it's not getting people out into the theaters. And some people are wondering if it's just franchise fatigue overall. Only film that's not a casualty in this thing is Guardians of the Galaxy 2. Because that's already, I think, eclipsed what Guardians of the Galaxy 1 made.
Yeah, it just hit that this weekend.
Yeah.
It passed what Guardians of the Galaxy 1 made in its entire box office run.
So what do you think Marvel has these other franchises don't have?
I mean, for one thing, for sure, it's variety. I mean, yeah, they're all technically superhero stories, but Guardians is a sci-fi film. Like, out-and-out spaceships. You know, and there are different audiences. You know, we're at this point where they're varied enough where you don't necessarily have to just be a Marvel fan. You can be a sci-fi fan and go see Guardians, or you can be, teen coming-of-age comedy fan and go see Spider-Man this summer. Or there's a lot of different types of genres and films and things going on within Marvel that give people variety. Whereas, you know, if it's a Pirates movie, it's another Pirates movie. And if it's an alien movie, you know, it could be a sci-fi horror, but chances are it's going to be a kind of bloated sci-fi, you know, mythology thing like Prometheus.
Yeah.
Marvel, I think, is a little more family friendly. It's just variety because some things Marvel don't perform as well as others. And it all depends on, you know, what type of genre they're filling and what setting they're working on.
Yeah, what's interesting too, because we're getting a lot of superhero movies nowadays, was one thing about Pirates that I liked was it was kind of a breath of fresh air in a way, with that it was a different genre but still in the blockbuster realm. And that's one reason why I liked it, even though I didn't like there were problems with it. It was refreshing to kind of go back into that world. Because what's so interesting with the pirate genre, that used to be a huge genre. You could do so many movies within the pirates genre until the Cutthroat Island, the Gina Davis movie, kind of ruined it. And so when they brought it back, like, they wanted to reinvigorate the pirates genre with Pirates of the Caribbean. But in reality, that's literally the only franchise or movie that can be in the pirate genre nowadays.
Except for Pirates and an Adventure with Scientists, which was an excellent film.
What is that?
You never saw that?
No.
There's an Aardman film, you know, that does Wallace and Gromit. They do.
Oh,
that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really fun. It was Hugh Grant as a band of pirates, and they end up in an adventure with scientists. Yeah.
Okay. Well, besides that, like big budget live action pirate stuff, I feel like Jack Sparrow and Pirates of the Caribbean has kind of cornered that market. And so that's always a breath of fresh air outside the superhero stuff. But I mean, I'm still surprised it didn't do as well. But going off these with pirates and aliens, so we've kind of officially hit the summer if you're looking at the calendar in a way.
Summer movies.
And we just graduated and we're finished with school. So what's some stuff coming up this summer you're excited to see?
Summer movie season. There we go. That's the intro. I always wanted to be in Drive Time Radio. Probably what I'm most excited to come out this summer I've already seen, but Baby Driver drops at the end of June?
June 28th.
June 28th. Yeah, Brandon and I got a chance to see a preview of it a couple weeks ago now, like 3 weeks ago now.
Over a month, I think, yeah, now. Because I saw it, and I came on the podcast and talked about Ben. I told Ben how much I loved it and how I do think it's currently in my top two favorite films of the year.
Yeah, I think it's going to be the movie of the summer.
Yeah.
What else am I've spent a long amount of time not excited for Wonder Woman because I'd heard several people early on say it was not going to be good. But now I'm hearing really, really, really good things from critics. I don't like getting my hopes up for DC because they tend to crush them. But I think Wonder Woman might be the first DC film I see in theaters since Dark Knight Rises.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, you would not watch... Have you even seen the new DC stuff?
No.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
I haven't even watched them.
Okay.
Why spend my time on something everyone tells me I'm going to hate?
You did watch Fantastic Four, and that was...
I did watch Fantastic Four. Yeah.
And we're not happy, and you weren't happy with it.
That was the... Fantastic Four feels like a time paradox in that it felt like it took forever, but also when it finished, I was like, that felt like it was like 20 seconds long.
Yeah.
But I also felt, you know, painfully long. I don't know how that works. But yeah, I'm going to give Wonder Woman a shot. It's a character that hasn't really been adapted before other than in Batman vs. Superman.
Yeah.
And on TV.
Which is one of the best parts of that movie.
Which I used to watch on Sci-Fi. They used to run it, Wonder Woman and The Incredible Hulk on Sci-Fi when I was growing up. So, I'm ready to give that one a chance. The Mummy, not hearing great things
about. The Mummies. Going off The Mummy, because I want to see The Mummy because I really like Tom Cruise.
Mm-hmm.
And I did like... I did, huh?
We know.
Yeah, from the joint articles we've been doing. It's not a tie to this series, but I did really enjoy the Mummy series with Brendan Fraser.
Yeah.
And I think the original Mummy is incredible. And so I'm interested to see what they do. And I want to hear your thoughts. I know you have some on this whole dark universe stuff with the Mummy. I don't know if they should have done, because this is a very confident move, is they just came out and announced the whole dark universe. For you guys who don't know, dark universe is Universal's cinematic universe for their movie monsters. So they're rebooting a lot of their horror classics like The Mummy. Russell Crowe is playing Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde in The Mummy. Johnny Depp has signed on to play the Invisible Man in a future movie. Javier Bardem is going to play Frankenstein's monster.
Undisclosed actress is going to play the Bride of Frankenstein.
Yeah.
It should be announced in the next week or so.
Probably. The rumor's been Angelina Jolie for a while. And Bill Condon was just announced to direct Bride of Frankenstein, which I know you're excited about. That's sarcasm. So what are your thoughts on this whole thing? I think it's an interesting move to do it before The Mummy's ever released.
Yeah. I mean, that's the whole thing. That's the whole shortcut that the Marvel Shared Universe created for everybody else, which Marvel did not take advantage of, but everybody else thinks they're entitled to, is going like, oh yeah, it's just like a great universe, so like bear with us,
yeah,
because this is all coming.
They haven't earned that right yet.
And and Marvel, you know, had to make that. It was like a grassroots, like they didn't go the Avengers right away. It built over these films,
yeah.
But you know, DC was just like boom boom boom, we're gonna make Justice League, we're gonna make Batman, and that's what they're trying to do now. So even if I think this kind of builds to like blockbuster fatigue and everything is a lot of people who don't like Marvel say, you know, when I go see a movie, I want to see a movie. I don't want to see an extended preview for another movie.
Yeah.
And that's what they've just solidified The Mummy as, is like, hey, you know what? Even if this isn't good, you know how excited you are for Javier Bardem and Johnny Depp and Russell Crowe. Like, so even if this one isn't great, You know, we might it's necessary. It's a building block, so bear with us. And like, that's you know, that's what they did with Batman vs Superman. Yeah. It was like, hey, listen, you know this one's bad, but like, look how good this trailer for Justice League looks.
Yeah. And so, and I'm just like, why do we have to? Because I do like the cinematic universe stuff to an extent, but like, not every franchise has to be.
It's perfect for comic books. Like, that's why Marvel needed to make that happen to really adapt their comic books well. But that doesn't mean that everything else needs it. Like, there's a Hasbro shared universe in the works right now, and it's like, there's no reason for there to be all these Hasbro movies. Second off, there's no reason that Hasbro movies all have to tie together.
No.
It's a little unnecessary. And this one, I really think this one came about because there was this big move when Marvel really turned into a cash cow. There's this big, and Star Wars, you know, like Star Wars stories were getting announced. There's this big move for every studio to go, where is our shared universe coming from? And people are scrambling for shared universes. And Universal just said, you know what? We've got all these monsters. We invented monster movies. Mm-hmm. Let's make it the Avengers of Monsters. And they announced that years ago.
Yeah.
But we're now about to hit the first stepping stone.
And they've had multiple attempts at it. They had like the whole Wolfman with Benicio del Toro.
Oh, yeah.
They had even like Van Helsing. And even the Mummy you could tie back into it. And then there was... what was that one they did? Oh, Dracula Untold. That was supposed to be like the original first one for the series. And then that didn't do as well, so they kind of backed off. I mean, the thing with Marvel announced Avengers in that universe early, but because I remember it came out the weekend after Iron Man was such a big success. Mm. They waited till that happened. They go, okay, this is our next plan. We're going to do Iron Man 2, Thor, Captain America, Avengers. And that's all they announced. I think, and then they held that as the announcements for a while.
And people responded pretty skeptically because everyone was like, "What are you're gonna make all these movies and you're gonna put all the characters in the same one? Like what?"
Yeah, and that was just kind of unheard of, and people didn't believe it was gonna do well until like after they saw it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just so that's now the big term of cinematic universe. Mm-hmm. Back in the day, it was trilogy. Like that was something about pirates. Why the original Pirates trilogy worked so well is because it was a trilogy. The first movie, the way the first movie ends is actually the way the third movie, or the first movie begins the way that the third one ends. It's Jack on a boat by himself going on his next adventure.
Mm-hmm.
And so now it's become cinematic universe, that's where you gotta go. And I'm fine with like characters being in the same universe. It's that I don't want it to be, you have to watch this movie to watch that one.
Yeah.
Because to go off of that, I want you to talk about, because we talked about another movie coming out that we're both really excited for, Spider-Man Homecoming.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the trailers, the movie poster they just released, not so much. So what are your thoughts? Just recently they announced kind of expanding the Spider-Man universe. They've added Tom Hardy's going to play Venom in a future spinoff. They announced, what was the other one there?
Black Cat and Silver Sable.
Yeah. And so they just announced that they're expanding it out. And I know you have some thoughts on...
I said, I don't necessarily believe that the superhero bubble will ever burst in the way that a lot of people are predicting.
Yeah.
Like, we're not going to get to a day where like no one's making superhero movies anymore, especially not Disney. Disney's never going to give up on that.
No.
Just like Disney's never given up on princess movies. Like, you know, sometime in the 90s, people were like, princess movies are going to die. Like, it's the 1990s.
Mm-hmm.
And we're still going.
Yeah.
We
just see kind of less, it's more curated in a way.
Yeah, and you have to put a twist on it. Like, you have to, you know, twist it like Frozen or, you know, even, you know, Brave or
Moana
which are, you know, technically princess movies, but not really. I think what the problem presents itself with this new Spider-Man universe, which if people, it's a little complicated, but Sony owns Spider-Man and all of Spider-Man's related characters. Sony struck an agreement with Disney that Disney could use Spider-Man and have creative control of Spider-Man within their films, but they still had to carry a Sony label, and Sony makes the majority of the money off of it.
Yeah.
So that's how Spider-Man ended up in Civil War, but this new Spider-Man movie is a Sony Marvel film. Sony, which means that Sony's Spider-Man universe can have Spider-Man in it, but it can't have any of your favorite Avengers, any of the other Marvel characters.
Any Spider-Man spinoff movies, you mean?
Right, this Spider-Man shared universe thing.
Yeah.
So this Venom movie can have Spider-Man, but you know, the Guardians aren't going to show up because Venom is currently in the comic books. Venom is currently a member of the Guardians of the Galaxy.
Gotcha.
So that's never going to happen. Mm-hmm. My thing is just, I think there is something to superhero fatigue, and I think there's definitely something to shared universe fatigue, mm-hmm. and I think it's just way too late in the game to be making a new universe.
Yeah.
I think Marvel is going to continue to do fine. I think DC, pending the success of Wonder Woman, will do fine. But yeah, I just...
Fox and them will probably do fine with Deadpool.
Yeah,
and
yeah, X-Men is going to continue on fine. But I just don't think people are willing to throw themselves into a whole other universe that they know isn't going to pay. They spent so much time building up these other universes and watching these other universe films. I don't think they're going to be able to commit themselves to another one where they have to start over.
Yeah, and then the difficult part is that it's a universe within a universe, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. As you have the shared universe of Sony acting on its own, and then you have Marvel's universe that connects with the Spider-Man stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like now you're saying you're adding, if you add this, you have the Fox version, you have DC, you have... Marvel, and then on shared universe, you start getting into the horror movie stuff with Universal, and then you start getting into Transformers because Michael Bay is already like planning on doing like 20 more movies of some kind in that universe, and it just becomes a lot of fatigue. And with a lot of those places or a lot of those franchises, you already have a built-in fan base from years and years of making movies. And right now, like you said, it might just be a bad time to try to hop on the cash cow.
Yeah. Is it too late? Yeah. I think Sony would be... I mean, obviously, they're going to try and grab a dime out of their superhero property while they have it. Mm-hmm. But I think if I were them, I would focus much more on just Spider-Man. Yeah. That's what people want
to
see.
Because now they'll probably just be trying to set up Sinister Six and all these different characters, which they've done... They've tried to do before in the past with Amazing Spider-Man. And I think they were smart then... by realizing that they were going down and like, cause I think Spider-Man is the only franchise that I know of that's like gone down in box office from the first to the last one. I think it was like either domestically or in a certain box office category.
Yeah, I think 3 still did really good financially. Oh, it just got panned.
But I think, let me get this up.
I know Amazing Spider-Man 2 did terribly mm-hmm. in the box office.
So domestically, Spider-Man 1 made $403 million. Spider-Man 2 made $373 million. Spider-Man 3 made $336. $262 for Amazing Spider-Man, $202 for Amazing Spider-Man 2. So it's actually gone down domestically, per film, which is, so basically from the very first Spider-Man to Maguire to Amazing Spider-Man 2, it's gone down $200 million. So, but I just think that I think by keeping it in the Marvel universe is great, but I think they might, I guess I think trying to do offshoots of that will just be too difficult for them to do and too difficult for fans to follow.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm still excited for Spider-Man Homecoming.
Yeah.
And so, and we'll definitely see how it goes. And so what else? Yeah, I know you have no interest in Transformers the Last Night.
No, yeah, no. No, 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 no.
Have you seen any of the Transformers movies?
Saw the first one.
Okay. Wasn't your cup of tea?
No, no. Mm-hmm. Bayhem's not my thing. I have a real... And I know some people feel this way about superhero films, but mm-hmm. like when the metal thing starts punching the other metal thing, I completely lose track of which one I'm supposed to be rooting for
mm-hmm.
and just start to think that all I'm supposed to be rooting for is for buildings to get knocked down mm-hmm. and... that doesn't
appeal to me. Yeah, and so I'm looking. Oh, another movie I want to bring up because it comes out in July 21st. Luc Besson's new movie,
Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets. Yeah, super excited for that.
And why are you excited for that?
Well, I mean, I really unironically love Luc Besson. I think he's made a lot of great films. I don't think he gets enough credit for how many like really good films he's made, just because he works a lot and he makes a lot of stinkers too.
Yeah.
But I mean, The Professional is an incredible film. First Taken
was, great. Is
absolutely insanely well done.
Mm-hmm. Then he does something like The Gunman with Sean Penn that like no one has heard of.
Yeah, and Lucy, which was incredibly divisive.
Yeah.
But one of his most interesting films is The Fifth Element.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I love about The Fifth Element is how visionary and how weird it is for just a like completely, you know, its own non-franchise sci-fi film.
Yeah.
And it has its flaws, but I think it's a really interesting vision. And he's never really, he's other than Fifth Element, Luc Besson normally keeps his voice like pretty realistic.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really interested to see him get back into this. Apparently this is a graphic novel he's been wanting to adapt for some time and just hasn't, the technology hasn't been available for it. And so I think
it's visually, his avatar is what you're saying.
It's his avatar. Yeah, it really is.
Yeah.
And so what I told Brandon the other day when we saw the trailer for it, I said, the main reason I'm really excited for this film is because it's either going to be incredible or absolutely 100% terrible and nothing in between. Which is a major problem with modern film, is like the passable movie that you mm-hmm. see it and you're like, oh, that was good.
Mm-hmm.
And then later you think back on it and you're like, oh, yeah, I didn't really even like that much.
Like The Tourist.
Not even The Tourist.
I just want to bring that up because we mentioned it earlier.
Yeah, we were talking about that. I mean, Jurassic World, I think, is everybody's go-to. It's like everybody went to go see it and you said, oh, they played the music. They had the T-Rex. Chris Pratt was Chris Pratt. It wasn't bad. It didn't let the franchise down.
Yeah.
And then when you start to think about it as a movie outside of the franchise, you kind of go, oh, that wasn't a very good movie.
Yeah.
It wasn't bad.
It wasn't bad, but it
wasn't great.
Yeah.
And that's what I kind of like about movies like Valerian, is like, you know that they're not going to be passable.
Yeah.
You're either going to love it or you're going to hate it. And at least that's going to be like a polarized emotion, is instead of just everybody kind of being like, yeah, that's fine.
It's going for broke is the thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like you're going to love it or it's going to...
And Dane DeHaan goes for broke. Like, you either love him or hate him and stuff. Cara Delevingne, I have not seen Suicide Squad, so I still have like a great opinion of Cara Delevingne based solely on her appearance as one of the DJs in Grand Theft Auto 5. And
that's the only thing
she's
you
great.
Have.
I mean, she's so good. She's got great comic timing. She's awesome.
Don't watch Paper Towns then.
Yeah, I'm not going to watch. Although I do like that director.
It's an okay movie. Anyway, but she's in that movie. She's the lead actress.
Yeah.
Suicide Squad, I kind of like can't blame the actors for that movie because it's not their fault.
Who
like,
do you blame for that movie?
I don't know how much David Ayer had to do with the movie is the thing. So I think it lands on Warner Brothers because it was in development with them. They're the ones that worked on the script. And the rumors that David Ayer came in like had like 2 months to rewrite it, which when it comes to writing a script, especially when it's supposed to be a big chapter in a universe, that's not a good amount of time mm-hmm. to do that. And especially with an ensemble piece as well. So I can't blame the actors. I mean, even Jai Courtney like is good in that movie, and you're just like, okay, it could have been something. But yeah, and so her character in Suicide Squad was just so damn like stupid. Not her character itself; it's the creation of that character which is stupid. It makes no sense, and like, I don't want to go into it. But they're going for broke, so we'll see how it goes with that. So a few more movies we want to sum up to that are coming out. Let's see, which ones you're excited for. Cars 3 is going to be an interesting one.
Yeah, I don't know. First trailer was really grabbed my attention. Second trailer, not so much.
But there's one thing you noticed in the
movie. There's absolutely no Mater in the latest theatrical trailer, which I love because that was the downfall. I mean, Mater was not the downfall of the second film. Turning a film that's about the merits of small town life into a spy movie is just ridiculous. But the fact that Mater became the lead character is the greatest I mean, it's one of the biggest mistakes that all films make, including Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah.
Where people go, oh, I really like that side character. He was really funny. And so people go, oh, let's build the film around him. And it's like, no, that's not why people liked him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's people liked him because he worked well in small doses. And he did, like, if you go back and watch the first one, I'm a fan of the first one.
First one's amazing.
Not a lot of people were. Like, what are we talking about? I'm talking about the first Cars.
Oh, sorry.
You were talking about the first Pirates.
I was supposed to be talking about first Pirates.
I'm back to the first Cars.
I still like the first Cars, though.
I like the first Cars. A lot of people don't like it. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of those people need to learn the lesson that you can't necessarily, like, look down on a small town. But because I notice a lot of people in, like, when I moved to LA, a lot of people are like, yeah, Cars is the worst Pixar film ever made. And I'm like, I mean, Cars 2 is obviously the worst Pixar film ever made, but Cars is good. But yeah, I mean, I have no love for Larry the Cable Guy, but Mater works.
Yeah, yeah.
In that film, he's got some really good jokes.
Yeah. But he represents that atmosphere, that town that Lightning McQueen's been thrown into.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how they have this bond from that. And with 2, that just became a totally different... Maybe Mater's off still being a spy is what it is in Cars 3.
Maybe he got killed being a spy.
So Cars 3, I'm trying to go through the stuff. So we talked about that shark movie that you're going to be excited to see.
Ooh, that one looks 47 terrible. Meters down. 47 meters down looks terrible. Rough Night, I'm actually kind of excited for. I really like that cast.
That's a very interesting trailer. It takes a big left turn.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm excited to see.
It's a dark, all-female, dark comedy.
Scarlett Johansson.
It's been pitched as like The Hangover.
Yeah. Kate McKinnon, Zoe Kravitz, Julianne Bell. Demi Moore is in it.
And
that's new to me.
Not Abby, but the other one from
Alana Glazer.
Alana Glazer, yeah.
Yeah.
From, oh my gosh, watch this show all the time and I can't think of the name of it. Broad City. Broad City.
Let's see what else we got. Beguiled, Sofia Coppola, who just took home Best Director at Cannes Film Festival, the second time a female second home that award. Recently watched the original Beguiled, so I'm interested to see what this one will, what she'll do with this. But it has a great cast. Colin Farrell, Nicole Kidman, Kirsten Dunst, Elle Fanning. Definitely excited to see. The Big Sick, which is, what's the
name? Kumail Nanjiani.
Yeah. Co-writer with his wife? Is that
his wife. It actually is the true story of how his wife went into a coma in like the first like 3 months of them dating. And he just kind of got thrown into meeting her parents and, you know, being a real boyfriend in the beginning of a casual relationship, and has been getting great reviews ever since Sundance.
Yeah. And then Baby Driver at the end of June. Please go see it. For the love of God. Like, I don't want a movie like that to like be forgotten because of where it's like it's not a franchise type movie, but it was so damn good. I told Ben, I think it's like behind Get Out, my favorite, like second favorite film of the year, probably. Despicable Me 3 in late June. We're getting an Amityville reboot again.
Yeah, that one's been pushed back a couple times.
Yeah,
it was supposed to come out this past Halloween.
Oh gosh, we're getting that. Oh, The House with Will Ferrell and Amy Poehler. Where they start having a casino in their house to pay for their daughter's college. Then we got War for the Planet of the Apes in mid July, which I haven't seen the first two.
Yeah, I've never seen it. Everyone loves them.
Everyone loves them, and they do very well at the box office. Critics love them. People talk about Andy Serkis. I think I bought both of them and have yet to watch either of them. They got Christopher Nolan with Dunkirk that's coming out July 21st. So here's a big question. Dunkirk and Valerian and City of 1,000 Planets are coming out on the same day. What will you see first?
I don't know, man. It's a good question. I'm really excited for both. I'll definitely try and hit those both in the same weekend for sure. I don't know if I could do
can't pick which one.
This seemed pretty heavy for a double feature, but it might honestly just come down to the schedules.
Yeah.
The weekend of.
And then you got Atomic Blonde, Charlize Theron.
Yeah. David Leitch.
Yeah, director.
The director of John Wick.
Yeah. And then you got the Emoji Movie. Coming out.
My mom thought that was a joke. I went to go see a taping of a game show, and my brain is just like,
what the show is?
Fried. No, the judge from Saturday Night Live.
Mike Myers?
Maya Rudolph.
I was like...
Maya Rudolph was one of the judges, and they introduced her as, like, being a cast member on the Emoji Movie, and my mom was like, was that a joke? Like, I didn't think it was very funny, and I was like, no, that's real.
It's a real thing. It's very happening. Real.
So I found a tweet from 2011, back when I was following TJ Miller, probably as a stand-up comedian, although I've told you recently I've been a big fan of his for a long time. Ever since he was in Carpoolers, the failed ABC
which I've never TV seen. Show.
But in 2011, he tweeted, emoticons have become less a way of effectively communicating emotions online and more effectively measuring how little I like their users. And so I just retweeted back at him and said, can't wait for the Emoji Movie, man.
And now he's in the Emoji Movie.
Now he's in the Emoji Movie. I took a screenshot of it just to make sure Sony didn't go back and make him delete it. Yeah, he's the lead in the Emoji Movie now.
I see kind of posters around LA with that, and I'm not excited. Granted, I'm not the target audience, so it doesn't matter.
Once again, if it's done cleverly,
it could. Yeah,
if they know what they're doing is stupid, they can pull it off.
Yeah.
But I watched the CinemaSins for Angry Birds. And it feels like they did not know what they were doing was stupid, and now, didn't pull it off.
I just realized that one of the writers is Mike White.
Yeah.
So that could be interesting. And Mike White did School of Rock, a great HBO series called Enlightened.
He was a staff writer on Freaks and Geeks.
Yeah. A lot of good stuff. He also wrote some kind of bad movies as well. Anyway, but he wrote some good ones. And so I'm excited to see what happens with that. And then Tony... the director, he's done storyboard art stuff, or story artist on like Lion King 2, Prince of Egypt, Road to El Dorado, Home on the Range, which you have a lot of copies of, I heard.
Yeah.
Tell that story real quick. So you have, how many copies of Home on the Range do you have?
I think we might just have the one now. Okay. But we were in Disney touring the animation studio in Disney World, and the guy, they were drawing Home on the Range, and the tour guide said, this will be, or no. He didn't announce it, but we went up to talk to him afterwards.
And he said it.
We went up to talk, my mom and my sister and I went up to talk to him afterwards, and we were just kind of like, oh, it was really good to see they're still like drawing these films, because I think Chicken Little had just come out, and it was like, you know, all these films are computer animated now, And he said, yeah, I got to let you in on a secret. They're scrapping the hand-drawn animation department after Home on the Range. This will be the last hand-drawn Home on the Range, or the last hand-drawn Disney film ever made. So we went out and like bought it as soon as it came out, and like stocked up on copies because they were going to be worth something one day, and then like opened one and watched it, and it was awful. And then Princess and the Frog came out and made everything, made it like the most worthless Disney movie ever made.
So you'll love this because he did Home on the Range. Where he was a story artist. Now he also directed Lilo and Stitch 2. Stitch has a glitch.
Yeah,
his first movie. Okay, so that was wrong. His first movie he directed that was in theaters was Igor.
Oh yeah, I remember when that one came out.
So he did that. So we'll see how it goes. But I'm interested to see because Mike White is one of the writers for it, and it's T.J. Miller, Anna Faris, James Corden, Patrick Stewart, Maya Rudolph, Rob Riggle, Jennifer Coolidge. It has a decent cast in it, so I'm excited to see that. What else we got coming out?
Oh, we can just cruise through August real quick because I want to bring attention to Kidnap, which I think is like the fourth time that its release date has been pushed back. This movie's been, I think that trailer's been out for 2 years now. The one where Halle Berry's in a minivan chasing down the people who kidnapped her kid.
Oh man, I don't know. So when's it supposed to be released?
August 4th, which is the same weekend as Wind River, which just took In Certain Regard at Cannes. We did really well at Sundance. Detroit, which is Catherine Bigelow's new film, and Dark Tower, which I'm pretty skeptical about.
Yeah. With Dark Tower, what's so surprising is they just released the trailer like a few weeks ago. And for a big movie like that, they usually start promoting a lot earlier. And plus, it got pushed back already once before. This was coming out this past February. I hope it goes well just for Idris Elba's sake, because he's a phenomenal actor, and then Matthew McConaughey. I'm definitely hoping it goes well. So, and then see what else we got coming out.
That's kind of the end. August 4th is kind of the last big, like, summer
blockbuster. Yeah.
I mean, Glass Castle, some people are excited for. Hitman's Bodyguard, they've been advertising pretty hard.
Yeah, recently.
And then in September, you got It. And, yeah. Kingsman, late September, but,
do we consider September summer that we're doing?
I don't know.
No one knows nowadays.
Kingsman feels like a summer movie. Yeah, and there you go. Start mapping out your summer, y'all. You got the inside scoop.
So, what are you most excited to see? Like, your number one movie you're most excited to see?
Other than Baby Driver.
Other than Baby Driver, because that might be mine as well, to see it again in theaters.
Yeah, to see it again. Yeah. Pretty excited for Wind River. I've been a big Taylor Sheridan fan over his last two films, Sicario and Hell or High Water. Pretty excited for that one to come out. Very excited for It. That was a phenomenal trailer. But I mean, Spider-Man, honestly, Spider-Man might be my most hyped film of the summer, just because he was so good in Civil War.
Yeah. I'm excited. I think that might be my number one as well, behind Baby Driver. I really want to see The Big Sick. I think that's one I really want to see. Yeah, me too. That's up there.
Very excited for Big Sick. Because
there's a lot of good stuff came out of Sundance. I'm just going to go ahead and say it. The one I'm really excited for, it's like a big budget outside of Spider-Man, The Mummy. I really want to see The Mummy because I love Tom Cruise.
Yeah, no, I'm going in very, very doubtful.
I don't have high expectations, but I'm still excited.
What was it, The Mummy? Mummy Ghost Protocol, or was it Mission Impossible Mummy Protocol, was what everybody started calling it when the first trailer dropped, because it looked like an action film. It looks like a Mission Impossible film.
Yeah. But then a lot of people are saying it's going to be like kind of it's more of a horror film, and it's like very dark, and it's not as like action adventure-y as, say, the original, or the original Mummy trilogy. But we'll see. Here's an interesting question. Why do you think people are like putting a lot of stock in a Johnny Depp for franchises right now? This is kind of my last question.
Because
Johnny Depp, you got Invisible Man, you still have Pirates 5, and then you have Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them.
I think Hollywood is very slow to recognize trends. And also, there's just, you know, the way, you know, Invisible Man might feel a little late to the game. But, you know, when Fantastic Beasts started shooting, Johnny Depp was still pretty well viewed in the public eye.
Yeah. But recently a lot of things have changed.
Hollywood's pretty slow to recognize when public opinion is changing. It'll take them a few years. But in the meantime, they're going to try and hope that they can revitalize his image with their films.
Because he has those two franchises, plus Pirates, that continue to do Pirates. Then he's in Murder on the Orient Express, which comes out this year by Kenneth Branagh, which has a great cast to it. Not sure how long Depp will be in it, but... Yeah, he's obviously getting a lot of work, and yeah, we'll see. But yeah, his image has been hurt in the past year or so with the domestic violence allegations and the allegations against his former managers and agents for stealing money. I think, and lawyers, I believe, as well. So just a lot of stuff that's not helping his public image. So, but now he's like become more of a franchise king now than he was 8 years ago, which is interesting. But yeah, so to tie it all up, what's some of your recommendations for listeners right now? Not just summer, but in general. Book, album, comic book, movie, TV show?
TV show, I just started watching Life in Pieces, which is the first season just hit Netflix. It's a CBS sitcom. Yeah, I had heard nothing about that show. I'd seen some billboards, but I honestly kind of thought it was a drama based off the billboards.
Yeah.
Just because I thought it was a drama because the level of the cast is pretty incredible. Yeah. You got Colin Hanks is in there, James Brolin, Diane Wiest, Thomas Sadowski, who I'm a huge, huge fan of.
We're huge fans up here.
And yeah, it's... I want to say this... in a hateful, I don't want to say this in a hateful way, but it's like Modern Family before Modern Family got lame. It's just really, really smart.
Yeah.
It's the first sitcom, it's the first network sitcom that's made me laugh out loud in years.
Mm-hmm.
Great cast. It's just kind of very streamlined. It's set up where every episode is four short stories about this family. So they can jump around to, it doesn't get as quite as cluttered as episodes of Modern Family can get,
mm-hmm.
because not every short story has to focus on all members of the family.
Yeah.
Which is something that often, you know, and I also like it kind of just like sometimes they'll just end.
Yeah.
And the thing with Modern Family that's gotten so tired is every episode they have to have the like hug moment at the end of the episode where everybody yeah. comes together and says, oh, I'm sorry. And they all hug each other and it's getting very predictable. Mm-hmm. And this one, just sometimes it ends in kind of like dark notes, kind of twisted notes. Sometimes the story's not resolved. But yeah, it's a lot of fun. Amazing cast. Well worth checking out. Mm-hmm. I imagine that anyone who hasn't seen it yet will probably binge mm-hmm. it on
Netflix now.
Yeah.
And what I like about it, too, it's a very simple approach. It's like having the four stories to it. Most sitcoms in general have that already. It's just they're interwoven together, and you don't have to do that. You mm-hmm. can just have them separate. And so mm-hmm. It's a very unique format, I feel, and it's from the episodes we watched today. I'd seen a few episodes before because my parents really love it. And I told them like beforehand when they started watching, I was like, Thomas Sadowski is amazing. I go, yeah, we don't know who he is, but I mean, where would you want to see it? Because James Brolin and Diane Weiss is in it. And then like a few months later.
Oh, and I forgot to call out Zoe Lister-Jones, who is one of the VIPs of the show, I think. She's incredible.
She's great because of the episodes I saw today. But I tell my parents, like, Thomas Sadowski, like, watch out for him. And like a few months later, they're like, he's our favorite character on the show. And so he's an amazing actor. Go watch him in Newsroom if you haven't watched him in Newsroom. So my recommendation will be, I've been watching a lot of old movies that I rented from Cinephile that I took with me when coming out here to Alabama for a few weeks. And there's a movie I really, really like the world of, and I told you about this, Thomas. It's a movie called Streets of Fire. And just, it's a really interesting world. Walter Hill, who directed 48 Hours, he basically talked about how he wanted to make a comic book movie, but not based off a comic book. So it kind of creates this world that feels like it's set in the 1980s, but it's like a retroactive, like where 50s culture, a retro 50s type 80s culture, where there's a mixture of like 50s cars and music and style to it. And it's put in the 80s and it just has this really cool world, has some really good actors. It's a very, the backstory of the film is as interesting as the movie because they had so many like problems with casting and like trying to make it, and it's like a lot of great cinematography, editing, just a kind of obscure movie, and I don't know if it's anywhere to watch except video stores. You can probably find a way to watch it some way. But that's something I would recommend, Streets of Fire. And I just recently rewatched Dazed and Confused, so if you haven't seen Dazed and Confused, go watch Dazed and Confused.
Obviously.
Yeah, so, because that's your favorite high school movie, correct?
Yeah, probably a tie between that and Fast Times. But
I think that Anna said that was Dazed and Confused was her favorite.
I think she said Fast Times.
Fast Times.
And I'm the one who said I got to throw Dazed and Confused in there too.
Dazed and Confused, because I'm learning to, after rewatching it, Linklater is kind of hit and miss for me sometimes. But that's one that like after rewatching it and then kind of watching like half of it again afterwards and then having us talk about it, like it's really such a,
that's one of those movies I've just seen so many times. It's like a religious text where you've just seen it so many times that the experience of watching it is like just as fun as the movie is.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And so if you haven't seen Dazed and Confused, go watch Dazed and Confused. So yeah, that's it for this episode. Make sure you follow us on Facebook, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at Cinenation Show. Make sure you follow us on Medium. We have a lot of good articles that are up there. Thomas just wrote a good article about Top Gun 2.
Danger Zone.
Yeah, with our boy Tom Cruise. But a lot of great stuff up there. I have a few more I have to post from other people that have sent us stuff. So yeah, really great stuff. Also, make sure you give us a review on iTunes. Give us a rating. We'd like to hear what you guys think. Helps us get better. Yeah, I think that's all we have for this episode. Thomas, thanks for coming to Tuscaloosa to do a podcast.
Ooh, yeah.
We came here just for this.
Worth the trip.
Guys, thank you guys so much for listening. I hope you listen to more episodes soon. Bye.